MoneyWeb now on The Money.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. I'm chatting with Garth McKenzie. You find him, of course, at Traders Corner. Garth, appreciate the time today. You had a birthday recently. You wrote a list of the 10 things you'd wished you'd known at 21 now that you're 45. For the record, I just had a birthday, 45, positively a youngin. We're not going to have time for all 10 of them, and folks can go to the website and find the rest. Perhaps the one that stood out to me, because I think it might have taken me longer to realize this than it did you. Growth shares over high dividend shares. I've had long a fascination with dividend shares. I love that cash flow, but I've come to appreciate, A, they don't give you the growth, they don't give you the appreciation, and certainly in the South African environment, they're not tax efficient either.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. It's excellent to speak to you again. Thanks for the opportunity. So quite right, growth shares over dividend shares. And it also took me a while to come to that realization. Earlier on in my career, I always thought, you know, invest and get dividends and reinvest the dividends. And you achieve a compound return by reinvesting those dividends back into the stocks and earning more dividends on the dividends that you've earned, you know. And yes, there's an element of truth to that. But there's also a caveat is that often high dividend yielding stocks are very mature businesses.
Yeah.
They've got no growth profile left, and that's why they are able to pay out most of their profits in the form of a dividend. And as a result, you tend not to get much growth in the capital value of your shares when you've got a very high dividend yield, particularly when it's a really, really high dividend paying stock. And I think back to earlier in my career, you know, there were stocks like PPC, cement company, which was on a huge dividend yield. British American Tobacco has always been one that's been on a huge dividend yield. African Bank was a big dividend payer, which hit the wall badly and went to zero. And that's an extreme case. But the point that I'm trying to make is that your high dividend yielding stocks are very often these mature businesses. They've got no growth left in them. That's why they can pay out all the profits in the forms of dividend. But also those types of businesses are very cumbersome. They're usually very big businesses, and they're often ripe for disruption by younger players that have come along and can do things faster, better, and more efficiently. For that reason, my experience has been actually you do far better investing in growth shares, businesses that have the potential to grow their earnings significantly in the future, and businesses that reinvest their profits back into the business to achieve that growth, rather than businesses that are mature and pay out higher dividends.
Yeah, it's that mature point. And I think that's what took me a while to realize as well. The dividends are nice, but these are mature businesses. And in many cases, they're going to get usurped by the sort of up and comers. The other one, which was nothing good happens below the 200-day moving average. So that for folks who're saying, what's a 200-day moving average? It's a technical, it's on a chart. It's literally just the average price over the last 200 trading days, which is what, about a year of trading data. And you make a great point. Below that, there's just nothing happening. You don't want to be there.
Yeah, that's right. So it was Paul Tudor Jones, I think, who's credited with saying that. And it's a well-known saying, and it's good advice for the most part. The thing is, a 200-day moving average, as you said, it's a lot of trading history. I don't think it's quite a year. It's about 9 or 10 months worth of trade. But it's a long time. And it's a good indication of the direction of travel of the share's price. And if you've got an upward sloping 200-day moving average and your share's price is above the 200-day moving average, then that just by basic maths implies that there's buying interest that's keeping that price elevated and keeps it trending higher. If the price dips below the 200-day moving average, then it's simply telling you that there's not a lot of appetite to buy the shares and there's not enough interest keeping the price higher or keeping it trending higher. So it's just an interesting filter to use to say, you know, if your shares are above the 200-day moving average, that means they're performing for you.
Yeah.
If they're below the 200-day moving average, it means they're not really performing. They're technically weak. There might be something wrong with the company, not always, but any true disaster that I've ever seen in the stock market, the shares have always dipped below the 200-day moving average a long time before the disaster hit the wall. So it's a useful filter to use. You know, some will say, yeah, but there's bargains below the 200-day moving average. And yes, there's an element of truth to that. But don't forget, you know, shares like Steinhoff and shares like EOH and African Bank that I mentioned, now, these are all shares that collapsed. And They dropped below the 200-day moving average a long time before they saw any significant selling. And it's just a good filter to use. You know, stay above the 200-day moving average. You're safer there.
Yeah, it's something I use. I find a stock, I like it, and I'm looking for something technical to happen. Usually I'm just looking for a simple breakout. But the other point on my checklist is, are you above or below? Because to your point, I'd never put it quite so succinctly, but it is a case of there's no good news below that 200. Best to stay away from it. Another one which really struck me, because I think a lot of folks are saying, yeah, we know Garth McKenzie. I mean, you know him as a derivative trader, most famously on BDTV for a decade or so. Active trading is not suitable for most people. And I think it's one of those things where folks are like, it's a skill we can learn, but actually maybe not.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the thing is, the CFD providers and the futures providers are now compelled by law to put a note on the top of their website about what percentage of their clients lose money. Mm-hmm. And that number is always between 70% and 80%. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say the other 20% are killing it and driving Ferraris.
100%.
It just means that those ones are not losing money, but they're not really necessarily making a whole lot either. There's a very, very, very tiny pinnacle of people in the fat end of the tail, or the thin end of the tail rather, that actually can make a lot of money trading and do it very successfully. But it's tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the people who actually go out and attempt trading can do that. And the thing that I think a lot of people don't appreciate is that it's a skill that you really need to acquire. It doesn't come easily.
Yeah.
It takes a hell of a lot more time and effort than what most people appreciate to be successful as a trader. And quite frankly, most people's personalities are actually just not cut out for active trading. And they'd be far better off just buying an index fund and investing their money in there and leaving it, quite frankly. And I just think it's an important point to mention because, yes, you're right. I'm known as a trader. I've made a life out of trading. But it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
It's really not for everybody. And I've seen far too many disaster stories of people who've lost a lot of money trading. And I've come to realize that it's actually not suitable for most people, quite frankly.
Yeah, there's a phrase out there, and I forget which way around it is, but it's the hardest easy thing you ever do. It looks so easy, but in practice, it's a whole lot tougher. And it took me 5 years of losses to get to profitable. And I still don't know why I carried on with those 5 years. I mean, I'm glad I did, but in hindsight, yeah, I was a sucker for punishment. The last one I want to touch on, and it's particularly relevant because markets are at highs. We've got US elections. We've got the whole worries. I mean, gold is heading to all-time highs. Financial doomsayers are to be ignored. You and I have been in the market long enough to have always had a lot of them out there. And sometimes they're right. Just randomly, they'll be right. And they'll remind you for the rest of your and their natural life. But as a rule, they're best ignored.
They are best ignored. It's like the stop clock that tells the right time twice a day.
Yeah.
You know, it's wrong the rest of the time. And I think in this day and age with Twitter and social media and whatever, the information is so much more easily dispersed. There are a huge number of financial doomsayers out there. And I think we are sort of hardwired as human beings to be more susceptible to negative news. Yeah. If we see it, we pay attention to it because it's potentially viewed as a threat to our financial well-being. You know, so it naturally piques our interest. But if you look at it, you know, the markets go up over time. And we overcome things. We've overcome COVID. We've overcome financial crises. We've overcome wars.
Yeah.
All sorts of things. You know, and markets, generally speaking, over the long term, do go up. And financial doomsayers, there's lots of them out there, but most of them are wrong. And they're best ignored, actually.
Yeah, and they make compelling arguments. Make no mistake about that. They make lovely, overly long YouTube videos, but they are typically wrong. And to your point, zoom out on your chart. It goes from bottom left to top right, regardless of wars, pandemics, elections, and everything else. Garth McKenzie, Traders Corners, appreciate the time. As I said, there's a whole bunch more points. You'll find that traderscorner.co.za.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.